Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
If you're a parent who struggles to talk to your kids about sexuality, well, you are not alone. Parenting expert Jim Burns says that most parents struggle to have those honest, open conversations with their children about the facts of life. I'm not a parent yet, but boy, I'm worried. I'm concerned when that moment comes around how I'm going to treat it. Research shows, though, that if parents do have that little conversation in the right way, at the right time, their children are far less likely to end up becoming promiscuous and having related problems in later life. So it's certainly an important topic. And that's why we've got Jim Burns on the line. He's written two books at the moment. He's actually released them at the same time. One's written for parents, the other one's for kids. One's called Teaching Your Children Healthy Sexuality. The other one's called The Purity Code. And he's with us now. Jim, welcome to Open House.
Well, Sheridan, great to be with you and great to be talking to you from Southern California, although I absolutely love Australia. Every time I've been there, I feel like I should have your kind of accent and I should get down there and I belong down there.
I actually first came across your work when I was a pastor of youth and young adults at a church. It was actually a role I didn't hold for a long time because I discovered subsequently I was probably built for doing other things. But there were very, very important books to help me through that particular career that I had. You've been doing this for a while now, haven't you?
I really have. I've been actually doing it for 30 years. And when I kind of wake up in the morning, although, you know, we talk to parents and that's how I spend most of my time, I'm thinking about kids. I'm thinking about kids all over the world who are struggling with issues today. And it's interesting that the issues that we struggle with here in the States, the kids in Australia are struggling with so many of the same issues.
Yeah,
yet what we're trying to do is help parents succeed. So I've been doing it for a long time, and yet my heart is still with kids, even though I'm not speaking to them as much as I used to. I still do a little bit.
Yeah, sure. All right. Well, the recurring message that seems to be coming through in Teaching Your Children Healthy Sexuality is that the more positive, value-centered sex education kids get at home, the less promiscuous they actually become later on. Now, the other issue is, though, that for a bunch of parents, you know, it's a bit of a difficult thing to talk about. From your research, how many parents are actually talking to their kids about sex in a healthy way?
Well, what we're seeing here in the States, and I don't know for you all, but it's probably pretty much the same, it's about 10 to 15% of kids say that they receive, as you said, good, positive, healthy, value-centered sex education from home. And what that means is that they're talking about sex, they're learning about sex, they're just not simply getting it from home. And it's for exactly what you said, Sheridan. It's because, you know, parents probably didn't receive good, positive, healthy, value-centered sex education, so they don't really know what to say. It makes them uncomfortable, so then they don't do it. You know, but there's plenty of people who are, and some of those people have a very different values and moral compass than parents do.
The danger, of course, is misinformation, isn't it? If only 10 to 15% of kids are actually getting this education at the home, well, there's, of course, sex education in schools, and we can talk about that a little bit later on. But then, of course, there's all the idle chatter that happens in the schoolyard, which can often be passing on information that's far from correct.
Exactly. I think back to when I was in fifth grade, some guy told me about the birds and the bees. My parents had never talked to me. And he actually gave me some misinformation. I think it was about until I was in maybe 13, 14 years old that actually some of that misinformation, I finally realized, you know, he told me the wrong stuff.
Right.
And you know, it's not just schoolyard chatter. It's also media. Media is glad to talk about a not-so-value-neutral sex education that takes place, and it's the music that kids are listening to, it's the movies that they're watching, and so much of that. So, again, glad to talk about it from that angle, but parents so far haven't been willing to step up to the plate and really have not just a talk or the talk, but have dialogue with their kids as their kids are kind of growing up.
Well, let's launch right into that then. How do you even encourage parents to even begin to approach this topic with their kids?
Well, I ask parents to actually, so many wonderful single parents too, but if they are married, I ask them to kind of talk about it on their own and basically begin to talk through what are some of the subjects that they think are age appropriate for the age of their child, and then try to bring it up more on a spontaneous basis. Instead of having sit them down, putting them at the table, talk through things that makes everybody uncomfortable. You know, look for a television program, look for a song, look for a comment that they make, you know, to kind of bring it up. Kathy and I would go away, we'd spend half a day looking at things on sexuality, education, drug and alcohol use, spirituality, and kind of make the list and then say within the next 6 months, let's try to have this conversation. Hmm. I think that's one of the better ways. And today you have so many more resources out there, so parents don't have to go, well, our parents never talked to us, we don't have any idea. You know, you can find the resources that can kind of get you started and get you jump started with it.
And that's interesting. So do it spontaneously, just almost matter-of-factly as life kind of goes by over a period of months rather than have the serious let's meet in the lounge room and have the serious chat.
Well, here's the deal, Sheridan. Studies show at a Columbia University, a major Ivy League school here in the States, that says if you have the one talk, which some parents will kind of take a deep breath and say, okay, we're going to just make the big talk, but that really doesn't do much. But it's the continual conversation of building a healthy sexuality. So many people and so many kids even have a negative view of sexuality. And you know, our sexuality, in my opinion, was created by God. It's a wonderful aspect of life. Mm. Parents need to do it from a positive side. And so that's where the dialogue issue comes to place. Now, I think there are certain times right before puberty, perhaps right before they date, where you have some maybe even structured time with kids to really talk through some of those typical issues. But pretty much I think it's the spontaneous, what I call planned spontaneity. You know, it's the time where you just say, boy, I'd love to have this conversation with one of my children, you know, in the next few months, and then look for it. You almost always find it. I don't think Kathy and I ever had to search too hard for whatever those topics were, even though they sometimes made us feel uncomfortable bringing it up with our kids.
Yeah, absolutely. This is Open House across Australia, theopenhouse.net.au for the podcast of our chat with Jim Burns, author of two books right now, Teaching Your Children Healthy Sexuality and The Purity Code. Let's define healthy sexuality. You've just talked about that. We want to encourage our children to understand what healthy sexuality is. How would you even define that?
You know, I define it from a spiritual side. It, basically, God created male and female, and that means that he created our sexuality, too. And then he said when he created male and female, and it was good. And so I see us talking to our kids about what is good about sexuality. And, you know, it's a beautiful act that God has created that gives people a closeness and oneness. In fact, at most weddings, even for people who might not have been in the church, but for most weddings, you know, there's something quoted that says, and the two will become one flesh. Well, that's not just about sex, but it's a beautiful illustration of coming toward oneness. I think it's important for us to, sure, talk about the issues, sexually transmitted diseases, talk about unwanted pregnancies and all the like, but at the same time, to build a foundation that, hey, this is something that's wonderful. And because it's so wonderful, you know, I think that promiscuity doesn't bring healthy or breed healthy sexuality. It actually can be, you know, quite negative. So many kids say, I regret now being so sexually active because now I'm in a monogamous marriage where I'm still, you know, thinking about those other relationships that I had in the past.
Yeah. Now, when do you start this conversation with a child? Obviously, there's two kind of problems. One is the problem of misinformation. If you don't start the conversation at the right time, they'll start to get information elsewhere. But if you actually have it too early, could there indeed be some sort of danger as well? When do you start having this conversation with children? What age?
Well, and that's a great comment, too, because you don't want to give them too much too early. But here, I think you start it from 3 to 5. And 3 to 5 basically says, you know, boys are different than girls. And you also want to somewhere in there talk about what's an appropriate touch or an inappropriate touch just because of so much sexual abuse, not to even scare them with it. You just, you know, if you ever have anybody make you feel uncomfortable, tell me. Mm-hmm. Then the ages of 7 to 9, 7 to 10 is kind of the time of curiosity. If they're asking you questions, you answer the question. But again, make it age appropriate. Don't give them a 16-year-old or an 18-year-old answer if they ask you the question at, you know, 7 or 8. Mm-hmm. By the time they're 10 and a half, 11, they're beginning to get into puberty, pretty much you talk through the process of what I call the purity code, and you walk through most anything. And then by the time they're about 14, if parents aren't willing to talk about most everything, then I think we're probably doing it too young, and they're getting that information from others. For example, in the United States, the great sex educators are, at least in a poll that I recently saw, the sex educators were Madonna, Britney Spears, Bill Clinton, the previous president of ours, and Dr. Ruth. Those aren't the people that I want teaching my kids about sexuality. Yeah. So from an early age, I think it makes it more natural.
Yes. I've got to go back, though, with that age bracket that you've just given us there and actually say, well, you said 7 to 9, they're curious. Give them some information, but not too much information. You're going to have to go a little bit more detailed for us.
Yeah.
What would actually be too much and what would be too little?
Well, let me give you a very quick story. A little 7-year-old boy comes home and says, Mommy, what is sex? Well, the mom goes, oh, my goodness, we're going to talk to him, you know, when he was 11, 12, maybe even 13. Where's my husband? And so she goes into great detail. this kid is just eating the cookies that she'd put on the plate, eyes as big as saucers. And finally, she said, well, honey, do you have any questions? I mean, she went into the whole detail. At the very end, he says, as he pulls out his soccer football application, he says, well, I still don't know what to put. It just says sex, M or F. Well, she gave way too much information, see? So again, what you probably would say is, honey, what are you talking about? What do you want to know about? And he would have pulled out the thing. Oh, sex. That would be, are you a male or are you a female? And it might even be an opportunity to say, again, remind him, you know, boys are different than girls, and boys grow up to be daddies, girls grow up to be mommies. And that may be all the information a seven-year-old needs, see? But we tend to panic and give them the whole shoot and match. Well, we shouldn't do that. But again, by about age 11, it's probably time to have that talk. And the interesting side to it is, like, I have three daughters. First daughter, we dialogued. We had conversation. Great. Second daughter never wanted to talk about it, but she still needed the information, so we just made her feel uncomfortable. We'd still talk about it. And the third daughter said, I know all that because my sisters have already told me. So, you know, all three different ways. So you have to then be, you know, age appropriate to who you're talking to, and could be in the same family, and you do it differently.
Jim Burns is with us on Open House. Jim, dating. Let's jump up a little bit. Interesting that you write in the book, studies show that the younger a person starts dating, as innocent as that actually might be, the younger they'll probably get involved in sexual activity. And I think the statistic that you talk about there is that kids who start dating at the age of 12 or younger, 91% of them end up having sex before they actually graduate from school.
So yeah, you're exactly right.
Yeah, next question. Obviously, all your parents are wanting to know then. When it comes to leading, guiding their children into healthy relationships and later on after marriage, healthy sexuality, what age do you think is an appropriate age for their kids to start actually dating members of the opposite sex?
Well, actually, in that same study, it says 91% if they're 12. And that's not just dating like somebody's going to pick them up in a car. That's two 12-year-olds, you know, going to the movies, but the parents allowed them to, you know, start that marker. But, you know, by about age 16, they're saying now that if kids start dating at about age 16, at least in this one study, they'll say that, you know, maybe it's only 20% of the kids will have sex before they get out of their schooling situation, before college. But the interesting side to that is, I said to my girls, it's, you know, dating is a privilege, and mom and dad kind of help think through this, and so I need to see some responsibility. And so we allowed our kids to, all three of our girls, to date at age 16, although the first date was me, it was an overnight where we talked about all this stuff. But it was some 16-year-olds aren't ready for it, and then I think you know, as a parent, you're not running a popularity contest. That's when you allow maybe what we call inclusive dating, where a couple of guys and a couple of girls, you know, go and do something together. But exclusive dating may have to wait until there's some, you know, responsibility, and it's a marker. Your job is to raise responsible adults, not be the best friend of your kids. And and sometimes I think we're allowing 12, 13, 14-year-olds to date because we want them to like us instead of realizing really what's best for the kids long run.
So how do you as a parent say no? But Mom, I want to. It's not right. Dad, it's not fair that you're stopping me. Well, I just want to go out to the movies with him.
Actually, you sounded like all three of my daughters, because that was their case. You know, I mean, the word no is a parent's prerogative. Now, if you just throw it on them where you've never had the conversation, it's going to be a lot worse than if at an early age you say, now, you know, here's the situation. You know, at age 16, we're going to have, you know, the conversations about dating. But before that, you're not going to get to. And you know what? Some of your friends are going to get to, and some of your friends are going to do this stuff, and you're going to think we're kind of, you know, old-fashioned or conservative, but we really have your best in mind. And again, they're not going to say, well, thank you so much, parents. You're just amazing. They're going to say, but, you know, it's just, this isn't a real date. We're just, you know, going to the movie or whatever. I don't really like him. You know, we're not going to do anything physical. And that's probably all true. You just got to set the marker. So again, as a parent, you talk to your kids earlier about what's coming down the road so they're not surprised. The surprises are what gets more emotion going, but don't also expect them to think it's a wonderful idea.
Another concerning statistic that you actually give in the book, and this is obviously a US statistic, and I certainly hope it's not true here, but I do wonder if it is, as many as 70% of teenage suicide attempts actually stem from a broken romance, because the young folks actually kind of get themselves involved in physical relationships that they're just not prepared for.
Right, and a lot of it is physical. Sometimes, obviously, it's a kid who's depressed or whatever. I was actually involved in an intervention yesterday where a kid attempted suicide, and it was because the girl broke up with him and said that, you know, she never wanted to be with him again, and, you know, so he did the wrong thing, and so he attempted. He didn't commit suicide. But, yeah, I'm going to guess, Sheridan, that it's pretty close in Australia. The times I've been to Australia and met with people who work with kids, they tell, and I do some teaching on suicide as well, and they tell me that, you know, kids who are going in that direction, oftentimes it's because of a broken romance. That's pretty much a international statistic. And again, the 70% may be different, but pretty much kids who have sex and then have a breakup and they're already kind of have a suicidal tendency, they'll tend to, you know, to go that way. Here's another fascinating one, is that kids today, then again, this is a statistic from the States, but I would imagine it's the same with you guys, that kids who have sex early, girls who do, about 25% of them go into a depression. So here it's supposed to be so wonderful, but they'll pretty quickly break up sometimes, and they'll have some type of a clinical depression because they gave over themselves, they gave their body, and then you know, it didn't work out the way that they had wanted, and they became instantly intimate, and all of a sudden it's almost like a divorce because of the breakup. Now, again, I'm not saying that's every Australian, you know, young woman, but I am saying that that is a pretty interesting statistic, and we're alarmed by that here in the States.
Now, where does all this leave something like sex education in schools?
Well, interestingly enough, and some people will be surprised by this if they know kind of where I stand, but I'm not absolutely opposed to sex education in the schools because I think there's some good information that brings dialogue with the home. But by far, the best sex education takes place in the home, not in the school. Mm-hmm. And the school was never meant in Australia or in the States to be the great moral compass. We want the school to come alongside what we believe, but that's not always going to be the case. It's, you know, we can't expect that from government. We can't expect it from the school. So I have found that some of the sex education programs around the world are really pretty healthy things that gets kids kind of thinking and talking. However, I think it has to go hand in hand with the dialogue with parents. And if it's something that's going to be absolutely opposed to what the parents believe, then any school in the world has, the parents have the right to say, for this particular day, you know, Johnny's not going to come to class. That's okay. What has happened is so many parents complain and gripe about what goes on in the public schools, and then they don't say anything or do anything about it.
Yes. You have counseled hundreds of teens on all manner of issues, sexual issues included. What are you hearing them say? What are they asking you, and then what answers are you actually giving? Give us the top, you know, four or five questions you're hearing from teenagers' mouths to you.
Let's see. I'm going to be as blunt as I can. The one that I hear almost the most is, what about friends with benefits, what kids call friends with benefits, or oral sex with just a friend? Is that okay, and are you still a virgin?
Huh.
I would say another one is, a really big one, is how far is too far? You know, certain kids don't want to have sexual intercourse, but they're willing to go, you know, right up to that point, and, you know, and what's wrong with that? You know, I think there's questions also that come on with gender identity issues today. You know, so many kids today have just kind of what we call gender confusion. They may not be homosexual, they may not be practicing homosexuals, but they just got a lot of confusion about, you know, gender issues. And so I have kids, you know, asking me those kinds of questions. In the Purity Code, the book that I wrote for kids, a lot of kids ask me about, is it possible to be pure in this world when there's so much pornography on the internet? And so I get a lot of questions about purity and the internet, and is that as pure? You know, okay, I don't want to have sex with my boyfriend, but I've been looking at, you know, naked pictures of, you know, Brad Pitt on the internet, and is that bad or good? Or, and then I find kids who are kind of addicted to pornography. My answer to any of those is I want to be absolutely blunt and honest, but I do challenge them to go back to what I call the Purity Code. And the Purity Code is a lifestyle that I don't think kids have regrets then, where they accept nothing less than the best. And the Purity Code says that you wait to have, you know, sex until you're married. And then it also says that you do that by guarding your heart. In fact, the Bible says, guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. I love that. It's by turning your eyes from worthless things. We've got to teach kids to stay away from the pornography because it's, you know, damaging them like crazy. And by, I think, honoring your body, and from a Christian perspective, I would say honoring God with your body, and then renewing your mind. And if you put lousy stuff into your mind, garbage in, garbage out. And I think we begin to teach them, just when it comes to sexuality or any other aspect of life, we teach them that really, by living by a purity code, it's really the best way to have a no regrets life. And it doesn't mean that, you know, sex is scary or, you know, horrible and dirty rotten. It means it's wonderful, but you know, have a plan with this, or you're gonna regret it and actually have some consequences that you're gonna live the lifetime with, including things like sexually transmitted diseases, but also the emotional side as well.
Yeah, walk us through that purity code statement again, because it's a little bit broader than the kind of statements that we've seen from other similar kind of movements that have come from the United States. They've touched the Australia and other countries in places, not probably to the degree that it has in your country, but yours is a little bit broader, isn't it?
It really is, and it actually stems from being a person who has spoken to kids on this subject for so many years, kind of going, you know, we have to make this commitment to sexual abstinence, but then kids, and I would have been the same way, they kind of go, okay, well, we'll do everything but. And so what I'm saying is, the actual code says, and in some ways it's a prayer, in honor of God, my family, my future spouse, I will commit my life to sexual purity. So I'm not really talking much about sexual abstinence from intercourse, but I'm saying, you know, purity is keeping your eyes and your mind out of pornography, and that's one of the biggest problems that's, you know, going to potentially take our generation, this generation of young people, down with it. So I'm saying that, you know, that you honor God with your body and you take care of your body, you renew your mind for good, you turn your eyes from worthless things, and then you guard your heart above all else. And that means we got to teach our kids, well, how do you guard your heart, or how do you turn your eyes when everybody else is looking at a porn site? You know, what is that going to do to you? And then actually teach kids why to bounce their eyes or turn their eyes, because the incredible addiction of pornography starts with looking at something, but it ends up either acting out or beginning to look at the opposite sex as a sex object instead of as, you know, the gift that was created by God. And all of a sudden, you have warped sexuality because, you know, you didn't turn your eyes. So, you know, it's very, you know, we got to talk more than just don't do it.
Yeah. There have been some well-publicized critiques of movements like True Love Waits and those kinds of abstinence programs in the past that say, well, actually, they could be doing more harm than good. What do you make of those critiques, and what do you make of, the idea that it doesn't work in the first place? It could even be more damaging at the extreme.
Yeah. Well, interestingly enough, and I've spent my, you know, adult life here studying those kind of critiques, and frankly, very few of the actual critiques ever say that it could be damaging, but then what happens is the rhetoric after you look at it. Here's the facts with those statements. The truth is, and I think some of the proponents of the anti-side to this would be shocked that I would say this, but I think they're kind of right. You know, kids will make a pledge to wait for marriage. You know, you talked about the True Love Waits campaign, which I love that campaign, but they make a pledge, and then what they're saying is it'll last 18 months longer than the typical kid. So they made that pledge, but then 18 months later, they're kind of like, you know, they've given in. And some of those ones where they're saying it's dangerous is that some of those same kids will go ahead and have sex, but they won't use any kind of protection. And so now you're talking about AIDS, HIV, unwanted pregnancies, you know, and the like. And I think that's why I go back to this whole aspect of purity, because we've got to teach kids more than just don't do it. We've got to teach them how to have an effective relationship, how to have an effective relationship with the opposite sex, how to deal with their own sexuality in a healthy manner. You know, the outcome changes when parents get involved. Most of those kids who took that purity pledge took it at a large arena event or something, or maybe even in church, but they took it without the parent involvement. Our studies show, and these are not necessarily Christian studies, these are just studies that look at this, that when parents are involved, kind of getting back to what we've been talking about, when parents are involved, then kids will be less promiscuous. That's the good news. One of the studies took 14 people out of a study of about 8,000 as they looked at one aspect of sexuality where these kids had kind of blown it. Well, that's not a good part of the study. And then people run with that because that becomes the headline in the news, as opposed to, you know, some of the more positive aspects of it.
Yes, okay. Well, Jim, we've kept you for a long time. I want to just throw one more question. It's a double-barreled question to you, just to leave parents with a little bit more, armor to approach this this quite tricky at times subject. There'll be some parents who actually know that their kids have not waited. They've actually had sex with their boyfriend or their girlfriend. How can a parent approach their child who has actually gone into a sexually active relationship? One, the child may actually be regretful now and say, oh, I've blown it. How can parents actually approach that particular situation? Or two, the kids are not concerned. How do you encourage parents to approach either of those two scenarios?
Well, first of all, I would use the word grace, because I think it's very important that parents, instead of just hassling their kids, And they are disappointed, but saying, I love you and I'm proud of you, and there's other aspects besides just sex. But in the one case where the kids feel bad, then I think you, as a parent, you help them through that process without lecture and without help them see that, you know, they can be forgiven, that this is a process that happens to a lot of people. They can still have a healthy life, and teach them, now that you've had this experience, what can you learn from it so that you don't experience the negative side to this. Mm. For the other one, I think it's kind of the same. You know what? I love you. I care for you. I think what you're doing is going to be detrimental, and here's why, but I want you to know that we still have relationship. We're not going to break relationship over this. And yet, when you come to our home, you know, you're not going to be sleeping with your boyfriend or whatever. You can set those kind of boundaries. And yet, I think it's important that you don't break relationship with your kid over that. And too many times, you know, they kind of disown them over that kind of a situation. Mm. And, you know, that doesn't help anybody.
All right, Jim. Great to talk to you. Thanks for joining us on Open House tonight.
Great to be with you, Sheridan.
Yeah, that's parenting expert Jim Burns, author of Teaching Your Children Healthy Sexuality and The Purity Code. They are both through Bethany House Books.
We hope you enjoy this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.